for joining us. God bless you. Be a blessing. Become a partner with us, will you? Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. As you give, I believe that God will bless you and strengthen you and enable you to be a partner for this end-time venture.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the information...
Good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And, of course, this evening our guest is Constance Cumby from back in Detroit, Michigan, who's been writing about the New Age movement, the world occult movement, and more recently about a man named Javier Solana, who is the foreign policy chief for the European Union. Well, he's got more jobs there in Europe than you can shake a stick at. He's really probably the single most important man in the world. And Constance has been tracking his career for some time. Now, certainly recently, the members of the European Union voted to increase the sanctions on Iran to make it illegal to actually sell weapons to Iran. But it's sort of like, well, locking the barn door after the horse is gone, because Russia has been working to supply Iran with all sorts of missiles to be used against Israel, and the surface-to-air missiles to use against our plane, and anti-tank missiles and ship-to-surface or ship missiles that can be used against our fleet. So Russia has just finished a large sale of very, very sophisticated weapons to Iran that will be used in what I believe is the coming war. President Ahmadinejad of Iran says these sanctions are not going to do any good. They're going to cut off relationships with the rest of Europe, that Europe should separate itself from the United States, and that if the United States has something to say to Iran, they should say it themselves instead of going through the European Union. So it doesn't appear that anything much is going to change. And then, of course, we read that Javier Solana is going to meet with the chief negotiator from Iran to find out if they can't negotiate some sort of a settlement there, so Iran will give up its efforts to enrich uranium, which, of course, is the crux of the whole issue, and may very well precipitate an American strike, a military strike on Iran. It's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. Constance, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. It's late here in Michigan.
I know it is, but I hope that you'll have some exciting things to tell us.
Okay. Okay, well, I listened to your preliminary remarks with some interest. Having worked in government for as long as I had, and knowing that I watch sometimes the players and what's being said and what's actually being done before making up my mind, and one of the things I have noticed with some cynicism is that the Iranian press, which is tightly governmentally controlled, always has very nice things to say about Javier Solana.
Oh, now that's really very interesting.
Very nice things to say about him. The other thing, the day before the British prisoners were released, Javier Solana had announced that he was going to make a telephone call to Ahmadinejad. And the day after that, then Ahmadinejad announced that in the spirit of generosity and considering it was a present to the British world for their Christian Easter, he was going to release the 15 Persian Gulf captives. And we really have speculated that Javier Solana knows he's being watched in many circles right now, and he's still trying to low profile in those circles as much as possible. I think he'd like to be have a higher profile, but he knows that he's being watched, and
okay.
So he likes to say he's admitted that sometimes he plays behind other actors.
Hold that, though. We'll be right back. All right, of course, we're talking about Javier Solana, who is the chief foreign policy negotiator for Europe, but he's really the man who's pulling the strings. It was very interesting that during the Israeli war with Lebanon last year, well, Israeli certainly was in a position to have won the war. Why, of course, Javier Solana visited Olmert, the prime minister of Israel, and certainly, I believe, gave him orders to stop the war, and which of course Olmert did dutifully, pull the Israeli forces back, and for all intents and purposes then the war was for absolutely nothing. And of course the people there were lost, the people on both sides, instead of cleaning out Hezbollah and trying to certainly get the Lebanese government to be able to take control of their own country. Why, of course, what happened was, for all intents and purposes, Israel lost the war unnecessarily, and it was because of the interference of Javier Solana. But even more significant is the fact that President Olmert of Israel did what he was told to do or asked to do. Mm-hmm. So do you pick the story up there?
Well, it was interesting a couple of years ago before Ariel Sharon had his medical emergencies that led to his present hospitalization and incapacitation. It was reported at one point that he refused to meet with Javier Solana. And Javier Solana, very bluntly, in the Israeli press, in the world press, said, like it or not, the European Union is involved. And at that point, Ariel Sharon backed down and did meet with Javier Solana. And the foreign minister, a woman, Livni Tibsne, I believe her name is, of Israel, has certainly been, she's been playing the diplomatic role and publicly very, very friendly to Javier Solana, what the private things are and what's being said. But there at least is some fear in Israel of crossing Javier Solana and the European Union.
Well, of course, things are never what they appear to be. I mean, we're told certain things, but there are players behind the scenes who are really pulling the strings.
Right.
All right, so what's your take on what's going on as far as Iran and of course, as far as Israel? Because everybody in Israel is anticipating there's going to be a war. It's not a matter of
Know if there's going to be war right away or if there's going to be a period where it looks like things are improving, either scenario. Looks equally plausible right now, and I guess time and events will tell. Either way, if there's going to be war, we need Solana to help us make peace, and if there's going to be peace, Solana takes the bows for getting it there. But the most significant thing that has happened lately was that he announced, with the cooperation of the United States, the creation of new global security architecture. And that was done at the Brookings Institution. And he confirmed something that I had long suspected. I knew that he was playing with both Stanford University and New York University. And in the Brookings Institution speech, which I believe was March 16th of 2007, he did acknowledge that he was working, that they were working very closely together to set up this creation of a new global security architecture. And in his own press releases. He did not take as modest a line as he did in the speech at the Brookings, where he said he'd played a modest role in the thing. And the European press on his own, the own press release that he released from his own website, he said that he had launched the new global architecture, security architecture at the Brookings Institution. And what he's talking about is no less than a complete restructuring of the United Nations. The G8 becomes the G10. India and China are to be part of the of that network, and that there's to be a total global restructuring multilateral institutions, and that that the world is too interdependent to really allow for sovereignty, that we have to have, we're talking about shared or pooled sovereignty among these countries. And he definitely has taken a leadership position. The United States government has evidently is backing him on this. The most glowing of press releases about the Brookings events, which frankly was one of the creepiest things I've read, was issued by the United States State Department. So that, and then I made another discovery, which has to do something I've suspected. He has been complaining quite a bit, and he complained some for back as far as 1999, but recently he's picked up the tempo on it again. And he has been complaining about what he called the fundamentalists using the global village to complete advantage. And he said that it has enabled some of them to become non-state actors. And he seemed to be quite perturbed by this. I guess he thought we were going to all communicate with carrier pigeons and tom-toms, and they would have the good stuff. And I just kind of have joked about him saying East not fair, East was created for us. And I guess they didn't think we were, quote, evolved, unquote, enough to figure out how to use the Internet when they're all communicating that way. But at any rate, they're frustrated over it. And I've read with some interest then that they are actively making plans for a new Internet and would like to control the access, and my educated guess is they'd very much like to shut us out.
Well, I think that for our listeners out there who do not know who Javier Solana is, Javier Solana is a Spanish Marxist who has actually been pushed into a position of absolute power in Europe. He is the man who's really running everything and is leading, certainly ostensibly, the European aspect of this move towards the one-world government, this one-world religion, and, yeah, of course, eventually, the one-world ruler. And, of course, he certainly even has a great deal of influence on American policy. In, yeah, fact, it was during the time of the bombing of Kosovo when the then-president, Bill Clinton, announced that America's NATO were going to launch an attack on Kosovo. This was certainly back in the late 1990s, and Bill Clinton came before television and said, I agree with the decision of Javier Solana to launch a bombing attack on Kosovo. In other words, Bill Clinton didn't make the decision to use American planes and America's might. Javier Solana did, and Bill Clinton, at least it would appear, would be subservient to this man, and yet the average American has never heard of him.
And I think that's by design.
I think so, too.
I really think he's very paranoid about American publicity on him. He was very worried about it in the year 2000. He was in Rome, and he gave a speech, and he thanked Suzanne Agnelli for one of his Roman government supporters. And then he said in that speech, he said, most important, he said, voices in the U.S. have started speaking out against us, most unreasonably calling into question our Balkan policy, seeking to undermine the USA policy of support for our engagement. So he said he had flown to Washington, he had met with members of the administration, and they told him, don't worry, you have our complete support. But he was obviously still extremely worried, and I had cold chills, Dr. Stan, and maybe you should too, because I was probably the voice that, then that was speaking out. And what I had been saying, and I said it many times on your program, that one of the greatest unsolved mysteries of World War II was that Hitler failed to reduce the Balkans before taking on the United States and Russia. And I feared that Senor, Dr., Mr. Solana, whatever he's calling himself this week, had very effectively used us to do it for him, because the European Union has made no secret of their aspirations to dislodge the United States as a competing superpower in the 21st century struggle for global resources. And for some reason, our leaders seemed very blinded, and they put this man who had been rightfully on the United States subversive list for many years, they put him in charge. Did they read him? Did they read his pamphlet, 40 Reasons to Say No to NATO? Did they read his grandfather's books that decried the Monroe Doctrine of the United States? Did they pay any attention to the utterly hateful family attitudes against the United States? And I rather suspect that we've been had, and it may be very much our own fault for not paying closer attention.
Well, I think that, of course, this is a major player in this whole game that is being played out today as we're moving away from national sovereignty. And people don't really understand that there are people who have a different dream, a different worldview.
Right.
And they march to a different drumbeat, and they hear a different trumpet. And I really believe it's because they're motivated by a different God. And their goal is to destroy national sovereignty.
Well, Javier Solana has made no secret about it. His agenda since the 90s has been to replace the as international law, the law of national sovereignty, with what he calls the law of humanitarian intervention. And evidently he perceives himself as a suitable authority to say what is humanitarian and what is not. It didn't look to me like he was all that humanitarian to the Christians in the form what used to be known as Yugoslavia. In fact, on the internet, I read routinely of persecutions of those communities where whole villages deprived of electricity, deprived of suitable water, of arrests going in and the houses of priests and their bishops in the Orthodox faith being raided, and their pleas on the internet are so plaintive, and isn't anybody paying attention to us when their forces were on the NATO forces and the EU forces were occupying Kosovo? Now Kosovo is all under the EU and possibly some UN forces. But when they were doing that, and it was the European command on NATO, he had split NATO effectively into a Norfolk command and a Brussels command, and it was forces in Europe friendly to Javier Solana, socialist allies of his in their struggle over the years, and did nothing when the mobs went in and burned most of the Kosovo churches in 2003-2004, and they stood back and let this happen in the new Kosovo. And basically, what makes this startling and why we should pay attention to it, I didn't know really what Kosovo was when I started my research on this. And in 1999, I was curious, and I did some peeking at it, and I was shocked on one of the a program similar to Google Earth, and that how many monasteries were in that area, how many churches, how many monasteries. And I learned that Kosovo was to the Serbian Orthodox Church as Jerusalem was to the Jews, as Mecca was to the Muslims, as Salt Lake City is to the Mormons, as the Vatican City is to the Catholics. And Javier Solana set a very important principle with Kosovo, extremely important, And that principle, which Jerusalem is getting to feel more and more, is it's okay to take somebody's religious capital.
And, of course, I really fear that they will eventually destroy all existing religions and place them with the universal religion, of course.
Well, they're working on that, and Javier Solana's been a major player on the Alliance of Civilizations. And, indeed, they are talking quite openly, about there's a strategic alliance, I believe, strategic foresight group. Which is one of the think tanks, and it's Indian-based, but it's they boast of doing many, many global works, and Javier Solana has been utilizing them for some time. And they and the Alliance of Civilizations, which, despite his attempts to make it look like it came from other sources, such as the Prime Minister of Turkey and the Prime Minister of Spain, both lackeys to him, it was pretty much his idea, and he was touting it back several years ago, long before the cartoon crisis, and using the Anna Lynn Institute of Civilization.
Right there, go right ahead now, Constance.
He was using the Anna Lynn Institute of Civilization and pushing this concept, and they were having preliminary prep meetings on this.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Great concept of what God is about. God is no longer a God of judgment or justice or certainly of being concerned about what goes on. He just sort of loves everybody, and he's sort of like just this wonderful person that he's your buddy, he's your friend, and he loves you and you love him, and everything's going to be fine. And that's not the nature of God at all. But they've managed to really, by infiltrating our seminaries and infiltrating our churches, they've changed the message and the music of the Christian church all across our land. And of course they're working in all the other religions, because this is a worldwide movement, so that they can join together the Buddhists and of course the Hindu and the Muslim and the certainly the Jew and the Christian and all the other religions all into this one big religion, where we can all live happily together, sharing the goodness, of course, with one another. And of course, but they're working. They have to, of course, do away with the basic fundamental beliefs of the Christian faith.
It gets better, Dr. Stanner. It gets worse. Okay. And what they have, the Strategic Foresight Group, and working so tightly with the Alliance of Civilizations, and they cross promote each other. And this is coming from the official, the promotions come from the official UN website for the Alliance of Civilizations. And they're promoting a report by the Strategic Foresight Group called An Inclusive World. And this report, which lays out much from people that say they've had tremendous impact on policy changes for the New World Order over the last 20, 25 years. They have redefined the terms, and they're talking about terrorism. Now, I don't think any of us are for terrorism. But then they've talked about what they call extremism. And what did they define as extremism but evangelical Christianity in the United States? And they said that the extremism was more dangerous than the terrorism. And they talked about, they basically marginalized us. You'd be surprised to see how undereducated they perceive, they portray us to the rest of the world as being. I know, Dr. Stan, you're an MD and I'm a lawyer. We know plenty of people similarly educated, but that has nothing, I've found usually understanding this has nothing to do with education, wealth, or anything else. It's basically the love of the truth. But these folks are saying that basically they have to bring an end soon to extremism, which they have redefined as evangelical and traditional Christianity. If you're unwilling to bend, if you're unwilling to grow, quote, evolve, unquote, and recognize that basically it's okay to put all the gods in a pantheon, gods with a small g, that is, and if you're not willing to bend that way, then basically you don't have a right to be here.
And of course we've seen Barbara Marks Hubbard's writings in her book, The Revelation, the book of co-creation, where she talks about those.
Oh yes, she said,
those.
We come to bring death. We do this for the sake of the planet. The riders of the pale horse are about pass among you. They will separate the wheat from the chaff. This is the most painful hour in Earth's history. That's what she wrote, and she's a player with this too. She's, in my opinion, a very silly woman who should be, is at an age where, well past an age where she should be making her true peace with God, and here she's out there giving a false gospel that we're all God.
And of course, this is basically the common denominator behind this whole movement, is this worship of this this pantheistic concept. And unfortunately, there are literally millions of people throughout the world who embrace the alternative religion in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, as we move towards a climax in history, and there's no question that we are moving towards a climax of history, why, of course, I think we're going to see an increasing attack on Christianity. I think we're going to see the undermining of the very fabric of our society, increasing levels of vengeance, pardon me, of chaos and crime and civil unrest. And the average individual see these things happen and sees the increasing tone of violence, and they don't understand what it's all about. Without understanding that there's an organized effort to increase violence in our country, because when liberty leads to a loss of order, then the demand for order will lead to a loss of liberty. And we'll be back here in just a moment with Constance Gumby as we explore these ideas even further, right here at Radio Liberty. Constance, you go right ahead and pick the story up.
Okay, Dr. Stan, I read an amazing book a few years ago. I believe it was somebody, it was a Russian Orthodox priest from your part of the country that sent it to me. And the book was by a brother, David Seraphim Rose, if I recall correctly. And he was a Russian Orthodox priest who in his youth had been involved in some New Age things and then had made a complete conversion. I wanted to talk to him so very badly, but unfortunately he had died in a San Francisco hospital of pneumonia just about the time my public work was starting on this in 1982. But his book is truly amazing, and one of the things, he was convinced that this was the movement of the Antichrist. And I didn't get to read him until I had been on the road about 7 years with my work. And one of the things that he said was that it appears that Satan may now be entering naked into human history. He said the years ahead proved to be more terrible than only people with the most devout of faith. And of course, he was putting an orthodox spin on it, which he was convinced was the one true church. But he said could survive this, and he said it would take only those with a really serious prayer life and a dedication to conforming themselves to the will of God could come through that. I think I have to pretty much agree with that. It's a very important book, but he was describing things. You go back and read it now, and it is what's happening. We're looking, he said, one of the things that would probably be happening would be a spirit of mass suicide. And he wrote this years before Heaven's Gate, that Marshall Applewhite thing took place. This young man that committed the murders last week, horrible murders, and then killed himself, suicide. Murder-suicide's on the rise. It's been a rare, rare day that we haven't heard about some type of shooting and violence somewhere.
Well, I'm afraid this is really true. We're seeing increasing levels of violence over in the Middle East. As we're being told, we're winning the war, and everything's going fine, and yet, we find that rate of tempo of violence going on in Iraq.
Well, here in the Detroit area.
Go right ahead.
The last couple of weeks, there was a man who went to a workplace.
You're going to have to hold that thought. He killed, just a mile and a half from my office. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Constance Gumby. Go ahead. Pick up the thought there, Constance.
Okay. There was a man who went to a workplace, and he had been fired, and he went back in with a purchase gun. He went in, and he killed one person and severely injured a couple of others that were in the hospital in critical condition. Then he fled down the road 120 miles an hour. And if I didn't run into some well-educated friends that knew him quite well, and it turned out he had been educated in theology, he had been actually a teacher at a prominent school in our area, private school, Notre Dame Prep. and had been a youth pastor at one point. He went completely crazy. And then the next day there was something similar in one of our suburbs. This was not down in downtown Detroit where people were not downtown Detroit, but in Detroit itself where it's more common. These were the suburbs where people were thinking they were safe. And then the next day there was something similar that took place in Dearborn, Michigan. And then last week we had the killings are becoming so common that everything but the big headlines are being almost dwarfed. Last week we had that mass killing at Virginia Tech institution in Virginia, Virginia Tech University. Interestingly enough, Javier Solana once taught there, and I learned that in the condolence statement that he learned. He had been a young student there and had taught there before he went on to the University of Virginia to obtain his doctorate in physics. But this is last week then we had a shooting and a suicide at NASA, and it's becoming very, very common, very disturbing news. Murder, suicides, and we saw somebody comment on it, and they said if somebody was determined to do this and then kill themselves and made a plan to kill themselves, it was very hard to stop this, that potentially we could all be victims of something like this. And it's a very sobering thing. This is what our Lord had basically warned us about, that the last days would be like. He said that as it was in the days of Noah, so it shall be in the day coming of the Son of Man. And I opened my Bible and looked, what was it like in the days of Noah? Well, one of the things that it was like was the earth was full of violence and the earth no longer covered her dead.
Well, I think that we're going to see increasing levels of violence and chaos here in this country and really throughout the world in the months and years that lie ahead. And I think the tempo of this is increasing, you've noticed, and it just wasn't like this years ago when I was growing up.
Things are different now, and people are commenting on it, and it's very hard to believe something isn't happening. There was a song popular in the 60s, there's something happening here, what it is ain't exactly clear. And then an exhortation to stop, look around, everybody and see what's going down, something like that. I'm paraphrasing it badly, I'm sure. But there was a very interesting treaty that went into effect, the European Neighborhood Policy, and it went into effect with Israel and some other countries in the Middle East, except that I just read some plans that they really had to treat Israel and Turkey as separate from the Barcelona process, and they issued plans for them of about the seven-year program that they were on, but the first 3.5 years were what they called the contingent period. It was a probationary period that they were on. It's up for a midterm review in 2010, which is a very interesting year because the New Agers have been pointing at this for years and years. When I first started researching Javier Solana and the Barcelona process, which he was ushering in, where they were going to battle religious fundamentalism worldwide, one of their big goals was this was to lead to a free trade zone in the Mediterranean by the year 2010. And they think that big things are going to happen 2010, 2012. I don't worry about it unduly because nothing can happen until God's ready. If God's ready, there's nothing I can do to stop it. But certainly he's used people and human instruments to hold evil back before. And then we always know, cherish the hope that like Nineveh, where the miracle occurred, and Jonah went down and mourned, and the miracle occurred, and the people did repent, and God did withhold the punishment there for a period of time. In fact, he called it off, and it was another generation that forgot that got that wrath. So, you know, we can always hope that maybe we're misreading it, maybe we're reading it prematurely, but it certainly does look like we're in some extremely serious times. The New Agers said that what distinguished this era from all passing eras was that modern communications had encircled the globe beyond any possibility of retreat. And it is kind of astounding to me. I can post something on the Internet, and it literally it circulates. The first article I wrote for Alliance of Civilizations, I was astounded to see that later that day it was translated and up in Japanese.
Well, we do live in amazing times, but, you know, I think that we're going to, I have a feeling that there's a cosmic script being followed. That I believe that there's a timetable. I mean, certainly what is going on in the Middle East today, what is going on in the Near East, doesn't make any logical sense.
Well, they have another name for it. They call it the Armageddon script.
Right, of course.
And there, in fact, there is a New Age book that was published before they knew they had opposition, and it's, they'd like to try to hide it now. Copies of it on the internet are very scarce and very very expensive when that book was so common. But now that they know it's being looked at carefully, they gave away in that book more than they intended to give away. Peter Lemasurier, the Armageddon script, and he did write that their script was now written, subject only to last-minute editing and stage direction, that down in the pit, the subterranean orchestra was already tuning up. Well, at least he knew where their music was coming from.
Subterranean.
He was more accurate than I think he intended to be, the subterranean orchestra. And down in the pit, that's exactly where it was coming from. And that's the sad part to me, that these people are really being sucked in. I really fear we're looking at a movement of mass possession, and that they're trying to spread the web so fast and so efficiently now, and using instruments that, such as the evangelization of the secret. And I've seen Christians who have fallen for just really the spiritual, I'll use the blunt word, baloney.
And for our listeners out there who don't know what the secret is, it's popularized by a woman named Rhonda Burns. It was popularized about 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago by Oprah Winfrey on two programs within a week. Larry King, Jim Carrey has been popularized in this. Jack Canfield, who's written the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And this basically is the idea that you can actually manipulate the world and the universe through your mind, that you can get whatever you want to if you simply put your mind into an intense focusing on what you specifically want. And what you're really doing is opening up your mind to demonic possession.
And also to cruelty, because with their way of thinking, if somebody's poor, they brought it on themselves, because obviously they were not doing the right things to for the simple law of attraction. If anybody breaks a leg, they obviously bad karma somewhere. It makes for a very callous one, because they think that people can easily take care of this by the workings of their own mind, and therefore if they are poor, they're to be shunned, because they're not even supposed to be noticing things like that. They're supposed to focus on money, money, money if they want money.
And, of course, what they're really doing is opening their mind up to demonic possession, and many of these people will play for their temporary aggrandizement and wealth by spending eternity in hell.
It's tragic. I'm willing to bet that Lucifer probably has more respect for us than he does for them.
Well, I think...
He doesn't like us. He wishes that he can suck us in, too, but I'll bet you he respects us more than the people who are falling for that.
Well, the great tragedy is so many good people, and I'm sure that many good Christians are getting drawn into this. We're told, oh, Christians can never lose their salvation. I'm not going to argue this thing theologically, but I knew many Christians, we've heard through the grapevine, have bought the secret, either the book or the DVD, and are beginning to practice these occult techniques with the hope of getting prosperity or a new car or a new home, or and that's what they promise you. Anything is there. All you have to do is simply focus your mind and your attention on it.
I just pulled something down extremely interesting from a strategic foresight group, which you went there. You go there by going through the AN, and here is how far their war on religion is going. One of the articles they're posting right now for a program they call Europe 2020, which they're the chief consultants on, Laboratoire Européen d'Anticipation Politique. They talk about laicity, parentheses, secularism, a highly efficient instrument of social peace. And here's a little sample. It said, with the French law against conspicuous religious signs, the outer world gets a glimpse of a key instrument of France's social engineering, invented along centuries of internal conflicts, laicity. At a time of growing internal and international social conflicts, it may be good news that this French debate finally crosses borders. And, of course, they're talking about the French law against religious signs. They said it applies to all religious signs, Christian big crosses, Jewish kippahs, Muslim veils, and so on and so forth. And what they want to do is outlaw them all, I guess, except for the symbols of the Alliance of Civilizations.
Well, I'm sure that we're going to see increasing persecution of religions throughout the world. So
they're making no bones about it. They're saying it has to take place, and that we've neglected it for too long. And it's basically, I think there's a very good chance that this could be the long prophesied, the fifth seal of Revelation, which was war on the saints.
Because we've seen recently where a naval chaplain was pushed out of the service because he wanted to pray in the name of Jesus.
Yeah.
And yet, of course, we find out now that it's going to be perfectly all right to put the pentagram onto religious gravestones in religious
It's all turned upside down. Good is evil. Evil is good. If you believe Jesus is the only way, you're not fit to be around or to have your children. On the other hand, if you want satanic paraphernalia, that's okay. And I don't know how much longer God is going to wink at it.
And in fact, it was so interesting. It was just, I think, about a week ago when they had the memorial service back at Virginia Tech, to commemorate the deaths of the students. And there they had their Buddhist. There they had their Imam, the Muslim Imam. And, you know, then the liberal Christian. But why would they bother to bring a Buddhist into this the nationally televised ceremony, or a Muslim? I mean, how many Muslims were actually killed that day? And how many Muslims are there at Virginia Tech? But you have to understand, it's all part of creating this perception.
No, but there's something else that bothered me, and this bothered me a lot. I don't know how many others caught it and what they thought of it. And, of course, the Taliban in Afghanistan has been rough actors. I don't think most of us would disagree on that. But I think then lots of times in pointing to the extremes, and they use that, in fact, the Strategic Foresight Group and the Alliance of Civilizations is saying in many ways we're more dangerous in the Christians in the United States than them, and that if we're crossed on something that we're likely to become violent, well, I guess if you wanted to force me to take an implanted microchip, you might see the worst come out in me. But they're saying that, hey, if we're pushed into a corner, we might have the capacity to become violent, and so therefore they have to water down our religious beliefs and defuse them and shame us out of them right now. But something that happened in Afghanistan that did trouble me, and that was the Taliban had blasted some Buddhist statues that were in their country and had blasted them to the ground. And they, of course, you know, when the Jews went through Israel and idolatry, they were to have destroyed the pagan shrines and the pagan idols. And God wanted no other gods before him. But this had been done, and there was a lot of there wasn't any religious world crying when those churches were torn down at Kosovo, those monasteries that had stood there for hundreds of years and had been very important landmarks for the faith. But when these Buddhist temples went down, but what bothered me even more was the fact that it was reported that for doing this, the Taliban leader who had ordered the destruction of those had been hunted down and had been killed by NATO forces, and it was reported with great satisfaction in the American press, and that basically had been his crime against humanity, was destroying those statues, not killing people, but destroying statues that were heretical to his religion and to mine too.
That's an interesting observation. I hadn't even thought of that. But I think that has happened certainly before we actually invaded.
It happened well before the invasion, but he was hunted down, and he was killed for specifically having done that, and it was justified. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm wondering just how close the rest of the war is on the rest of us, and what dangerous precedents are being set.
Well, I think there are all sorts of dangerous precedents, but the people really don't understand that there's an organized, orchestrated effort to destroy Christianity. It starts with our Supreme Court. It permeates every aspect of our court system. It certainly is present. It's certainly in the legislature. It's present in the White House. And the average individual has no idea what's going on. They just do not have no grasp at all. They could not imagine, of course, that there is this other dimension. There is a spiritual dimension. There really are demonic figures and demonic forces at work within our society today. Satan is real. Demons are real. People are possessed by demons. And, of course, this explains so much of what's going on in the world today. And you tell people that, they look at you as if you're crazy.
Now, there was a conference. The New Agers thought they were going to pull this off many years ago. And, of course, they had a little glitch in their plans, and they kind of went into hiding for a while. But now they're back, and many of the same players. One of them is Leonard Swidler. But there was a conference of all the big folks and governmental people and everything else, and back when they were shaping up a hope for a new world religion that was published by an apostate Catholic publisher, Orbis Books. And he wrote a book called Toward a Universal Theology of Religion. But one of the more disturbing things in the book, he talked about how in one of the countries in Africa, I believe it was the Sudan, and there had been some talk about liberalizing laws for women, and that somebody had quoted verses from the Quran about it, and the government went in and had those people summarily executed.
Hold on now, please. Okay, go right ahead.
Our government had people summarily, or the Sudan government, with the pressure of other foreign governments, had the religious leaders quoting verses from the Quran executed, summarily tried and executed for using the Quran to justify, to oppose a program that the government was proposing. And I'm thinking, just how long until the exhortation in the book was a not-so-subtle go and do likewise as to other people standing in the way of this, because it was in the context of people opposing the New World Religion.
Well, we're just about out of time, Constance. Would you like to get your blog spot out so people would...
My blog spot, and I've had a fascinating series of articles up that has had much response on Javier Solana. I have a series of eight articles up continuing. It's a continuing series with information you're probably going to have trouble accumulating anywhere else. And that's worldwidewebcumby.blogspot.com. That's www.worldwidewebcumby.blogspot.com.
All right, fine. I suggest people go there, pull them down, keep these things on file, because Constance is a great source of information, in fact, a leading source of information on Javier Solana. And we went a little bit more into his background. You'd find that the number 666 keeps turning up over and over again.
It created his job. His job was created with section 666 and enhanced with recommendation 666.
So you have to wonder, is that just coincidence? Well, I don't think so.
The symbolism is pretty heavy. I think somebody used it with some intentionality. It's not the real thing to spook us.
Well, I think that we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, and everybody's confused because they don't recognize what the real battle is about. And that's why we love to have Constance on, because, of course, she helps to clarify that. Constance Cumby, thank you so very much for being with us. And
thank you for the opportunity, Dr. Stan. You're doing wonderful work.
Well, we'll keep doing it. I hope we can call on you again sometime real soon.
Anytime.
Good night. God bless.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, Our guest this evening has been Constance Cumbie, who is a lawyer, of course, back in Detroit, Michigan, and she keeps us appraised of the latest escapades of the most powerful man in the world, a man named Javier Solana. And, of course, when he said we were going to bomb Kosovo, Bill Clinton said, I agree with Javier Solana. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we hope that you've enjoyed our talk with Constance Cumbie. We actually have a DVD and a video of the talk that Constance gave at our last seminar. They're really very, very good. It's the same talk. You get either DVD or video. It's called The Aquarian Conspiracy. The Aquarian Conspiracy. And then we have a four-tape set of interviews with Constance Cumbie. First of all, talking about how she first learned about the Aquarian Conspiracy many years ago, back in the early 1980s, and she found out that this is an organized, orchestrated effort all across America, indeed all across the world, to bring the Antichrist to power. And these people have told her as much, and you'll find the interviews very, very informative. And then, of course, some of the interviews deal with Javier Solana, a man who is the most powerful man in Europe, whose position was not only created by Resolution 666, but later reconfirmed by another governmental edict, 666. And if you watch the papers very closely, you'll find out that Javier Solana is the chief negotiator for the European Union today. The European Union, of course, is certainly larger than the United States. Its currency is far more stable, and I suspect within a year or so it would usurp the position of the United States as we'd lose our position as a reserve currency, and the dollar no longer reigns supreme. And with that will come tremendous financial catastrophe for the United States. Now, if you'd be interested in learning more about how to get our a DVD or video talk by Constance Cumbie of the four-tape set, or her book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. Now, we have one of the few supplies of this available anywhere in the world today. Why we still have this available, these are available by calling. Well, if you want to learn about how to get them, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to begin to see the overview of this. And, of course, that's my talk, or the book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and then, more recently, the most recent talk, which explains the secret. The secret which Rhonda Burns tells you about and tells you how wonderful it is. We tell you how dangerous and frightening it is. And my talk was given before I ever heard of Rhonda Burns. It was called Forbidden Secret. And as I read Rhonda Burns' material, so much of what she said was absolutely true. There is a secret that has been passed down through the ages, and certainly was known to Plato and to Aristotle and to Thomas Edison and to so many of the great thinkers of the past. And what she tells you is true. But, of course, the way she interprets it and what you should do with the knowledge is certainly absolutely false. Because if you were to, of course, follow the advice you're being given, you would be opening yourself up to demonic possession. And why at this time in history, is the first time in 5,000 years, is this being popularized by suddenly some of our most popular television shows? Well, I think it shows you how late the time is. Anyway, of course, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Let me recommend other information, Chris Pinto's wonderful documentary, award-winning documentary, almost 2.5 hours, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and his most recent release, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of our Nation's Capital. And it goes into, well, you're really going to have to get it, but there are demonic forces which are actually engraved in stone all over our nation's capital. Why are they there? Who put them there? What is America's secret destiny? Why are our troops fighting a no-win war? Why did we send them to the Middle East? with a situation where we never allowed them to win. The generals were never allowed to run the war. It was always micromanaged from the Pentagon, and why wouldn't we let them win? Well, I pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back in just a moment for the next hour here. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and, well, the views of our guest. And our guest this evening, hopefully, is going to be Barry Shamish. And we're going to be talking about what's happening in the Near East, what's happening in the Mideast. And, of course, certainly I believe that momentous events are about to occur there. Now, I did a wonderful interview, I guess it was yesterday, with Pastor Chuck Christmeyer, who told me that just that very day he had been interviewing a man in Israel, a very well-known man who was writing a book, written a wonderful book about America's influence in the Middle East going back to 1776. The man was not a believer. He was Jewish, but he, during the half hour break, recognizing, of course, that Pastor Christmeyer was very sympathetic to Israel. He said, you know, everybody here knows, of course, if we are in an impossible situation, everybody here is frightened to death, and there's absolutely nothing we can do to save Israel. We're going to have to make every concession. We're going to have to give up Judea. We're going to have to give up Samaria. We're going to have to turn over control of Israel to the Arabs. There is no way we can possibly survive as a nation. You know, the way the situation is today, and of course we'll be lucky if we're not, certainly, and the inference was, if we don't make all of these concessions to the Palestinians and to the Arabs who surround us, we'll all be killed. And Pastor Christmeyer said, certainly God has put the Jewish people there. Don't you believe, you know, God's promise that he will preserve Israel one way or the other? And the tragic thing was, this Jewish man did not believe that at all. And so many Jews don't. And there, so many Jews are willing to make any concessions at all without the realization that there is no concessions they can make which will ever allow them to live in peace with their Arab neighbors. I wish there were. I wish there was an easy solution. But, of course, certainly, as you remember, according to the original Oslo Agreement, they were going to give up over 95% of their land to the Arabs, and even that wasn't enough. Arafat turned down the deal, demanding complete control of Jerusalem. And that was the only way, 95% of the land and complete control of Jerusalem, and there was no way, of course, that they could make that concession as well. And so the Oslo Accord simply more or less collapsed. But understand, ladies and gentlemen, that The Syrians are preparing for war. They're armed with Russian missiles that are made with American technology and with the help of certainly of financing. Russia has been built up financially with your tax dollars and, of course, money from our great oil companies who drilled the wells and certainly have made Russia financially stable. Russia today is the leading oil producer in the world. Russia today is the leading producer of natural gas in the world. And none of this would have come about had it not been for constant infusions of massive amounts of money from the United States into Russia. And we'll be dealing with that with my next newsletter and telling what they were saying back in the 1980s as we were pouring millions of dollars of money, literally giving it to the Russians so they could build up their economy so that one day, of course, we would be where we are today. And as Russia then arms Iran and Syria in preparation for the coming war, and Russia will sit on the sidelines and fight, I fear, until the last American soldier has died, until the last American carrier has been sunk in that area. Is it possible that we could be moving into a major confrontation in the Middle East, the Near East? Well, we'll just have to wait and see, but I fear it will be. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. We're frantically waiting for Barry Shamish to come, and he's always certainly one of my favorite guests. Barry is a Jewish patriot who certainly is an investigative reporter who knows all of the major players in Israel and has been following the machinations of what's been going on in Israel for many years. And as Barry, of course, tells you, he tells you how many people, the conservative Jewish people, the God-fearing people in Israel, how many of them have frankly been murdered. And certainly it's not simply an occasional murder. It's the most incredible stories. And as you know, of course, Rabin was murdered. It's most of the Jewish people now accept the fact that Rabin was murdered by the Israel Intelligence Service. And, of course, we can thank Barry for ferreting out that murder, but so many other murders have been carried out, and increasingly there's been murder after murder of conservative rabbis and the conservative leaders in Israel. We're talking literally dozens of them have been killed in the last couple of years, so there will be no opposition to what lies ahead. And that is, of course, going to be the effort to simply surrender Israel's sovereignty, turn it over to the United Nations, and bring in United Nations forces that will control Jerusalem, will control all of the area there. And eventually, of course, the whole idea will be to bring the whole world under United Nations control. But before the people of the United States are willing to accept that, why, there's going to have to be another great war. And I believe that this Third World War has all been planted for a long time. If you go back and you read the writings of H.G. Wells, and H.G. Wells is one of the primary architects of everything going on today. And those of you who have not certainly read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or certainly one of the major books, it would be an experiment in autobiography written by H.G. Wells in the 1920s. And he tells about how between about 1901 and 1909, why he, H.G. Wells, of course, was a Fabian socialist, and H.G. Wells, in concert with George Bernard Shaw and Bertrand Russell and certainly the other Sidney and Beatrice Webb and the three or four other members of the Fabian socialist movement, held regular meetings with the leaders of the British banking industry, Lord Cecil and Lord Milner and others, and they met on a weekly basis in London, England, in a little organization known as the Coefficients. And certainly it was there that the First World War was planned. And how do we know that? Why, of course, we have the writings of Bertrand Russell, and I believe it's in the second of his three parts of his autobiography, but we have the pages if anybody would like to see them, where Bertrand Russell tells about how he was able actually to Bertrand Russell tells how he attended the meeting where they were planning the First World War. Sir Edward Grey got up, who was later become the British Foreign Secretary, and the man who led England into the First World War, and Bertrand Russell recognized that they were planning the First World War and spoke out against it. And, of course, as a result of that, he left this little group known as the Coefficients. But Bertrand Russell, certainly describes all of this in his autobiography, but H.G. Wells, many years later, writing in several books, The Open Conspiracy and The New World Order, and then, of course, in a book called The Shape of Things to Come, written in the early 1930s, he's writing about, of course, exactly when the Second World War would start. He even has it down to the very month it's going to occur in a conflict between Poland and Germany. And then he says, and then the Third Triad World Order will come about in 1988 as a result of a conference that's held in Basra. Those were his exact words. And you have to understand, this is all scripted. Now, he was off a few years. Remember, this is written in the 1930s. But there is a cosmic script. It's being carried out, and I feel that it's leading us towards the climax of history and some of the most frightening times mankind has ever seen. Well, with that as a background, let's go to our special guest this evening. Barry, it's good to have you with us again.
Oh, my pleasure, as always.
All right, well, you pick up the story there.
Yeah, I'll have a little announcement later that you might enjoy. But last time we spoke, we were talking originally about Virginia Tech, and we went through the terrible inconsistencies of this mass murder, and we went through the phenomenon of somebody in the middle of a murder streak, a spree, killing two people, his clothes covered in blood and guts, runs home and mails a letter? That's a murder spree? He walks 15 minutes in a flak jacket and wearing a backpack with 225 bullets inside and two revolvers, and no one notices him? Look, what I claimed, and by the way, I'm going to add one other thing. The business with the Israeli Holocaust survivor, Levescu. There was one Israeli professor on that campus in hundreds of buildings, and the shooter went into the campus and went for his room. And to tell the truth, I don't believe that was a coincidence, not at all, because the day of this murder of 32 students with another 18 wounded was Yom HaShoah. That was International Holocaust Day. And then we have the whole business about him being blasted to death by one 9mm bullet so that his face couldn't be recognized. Now, it turns out that the last person to have heard him alive gave an interview all over the States, and he claimed that Joe came up to him with a gun and shot him in the, he was playing possum, of course, he claims, and shot him in the buttocks and shoulder, and he kept on playing possum, and that's why he's alive today. And I just said, no, you aren't. No, nobody can shoot you in the ass, and you're not going to move. Well, that was his story. And what he heard was two shots. This is what he said. Two shots, and then the gunman fell. Mister, if you're going to shoot yourself in the head, you don't get two shots. It's that simple. And here was proof positive that somebody else shot Chove, undoubtedly a policeman. Why they want him killing himself, who knows? The fact remains nobody shoots themselves in the head twice. Doesn't happen that way.
I simply went over some
of the anomalies here. I claimed that the Korean at the post office was not Chove, but someone else, and I'll stick with that. And then you have the real big problem at Norris Hall, where there's a security admission key. Anyone who goes into Norris Hall has to have slide this card, an ID card, or you don't get in. The doors don't open. Now, Cho was not a student of engineering. He didn't ever have a class at Norris Hall. How did he get this? How did he get the key? How did he get in? And then we have, of course, the horrible fact that let's say he did get in. Well, there's only two ways he could have done that. One, somebody faked him a key or let him in. Or two, he rushed the student who was used his real card. But if that were the case, well, there should be a dead student after taking his card away. Or somebody should have said, he pushed me aside and got in. The fact is, what happened at Virginia was classic mind-controlled mass murder. And that's what it was. And if people would look into these questions, they would also find there are no easy answers to them. None. Now, we find out that his sister, Cho's sister, works for the CIA and supplying Iraq, and we find out all this stuff. How unexpected, really. Really. It's only every one of these murders have these ties. Columbine, Klebold, Air Force, year and a half, Air Force shut down, experiment taking place, his father involved in the experiment. You start looking at all of them. They all disappear, and during their disappearance, they're made crazy, and then they shoot people. He did, now we should mention the one cover-up that is very irritating, and that is Axe Ismail. Axe Ismail, Ismail, I-S-M-A-I-L, is an Arabic word. He is the son of Ibrahim, and if you're a Quranic scholar, you know that Ibrahim took an axe and chopped up a temple. The quote was sent to me several times. But that's not the way you hear it on CNN. What you hear is that Ismail was a corrupted spelling of the Hebrew Yishmael, which also makes him undoubtedly a character in Moby Dick. Everything but the Arabic tie. And then, of course, when this person reading from a script, reading a rant from a script, starts turning to Jesus, that you are trying to crucify me, you don't know what it's like to have dirt shoved down your throat and all this stuff, we've got yourself an anti-Christian, pro-Arabic mass murderer doing something that's been covered up mightily, but no one's asking the right questions. 32 students dead, another 18 wounded, and nobody's asking the questions. None of the parents are asking the questions. The worst they can think of is the cops were very naughty for after finding the two murders that they didn't send hundreds of cops to every building and protect the students. No one can figure that out. But that's very easy to figure out. Well, the cops were clearly trying to allow this person to keep on killing. There's no other explanation, by the way. No other explanation works. Okay, and that's what we discussed. And, well, it reminded me of the murders going on in Israel. Shall we remind them of Ze'evi or Matagur?
Go right ahead.
In case you people didn't know, Matagur was Yitzhak Rabin's deputy. He was a deputy minister of defense. He was murdered in July of 1995, 3 months before Rabin was murdered. Matagur, this was my first expose of a political murder. Matagur was a hero. He was the general, I believe he was a general even in 67, who captured Jerusalem. He was a proud and honest Israeli from the school of Zionism that actually valued honesty, and such a thing existed, by the way. Not anymore, but it did once exist. And one day in July, I remember the day because I was at a conference, and I met at the conference Benjamin Kahana. And I'm going to possibly return to this. He told me about a witness to his own father's death. You want to talk coincidence? His father, Rabbi Meir Kahana, was also shot to death in New York by someone supposedly independent named Nosser. The fact of the matter is that there was a postman in the audience who was supposed to shoot Nosser dead. And of all things, Nosser shoots Kahana dead, and then he shoots the postman dead. And he told me the whole story of Benjamin Kahana, how they had a witness, how he lives in protection, under protection in Israel, and that his father's death was reported. This witness signed an affidavit, and then I went and saw the press conference. He said that he informed the FBI and the Mossad of the plot with Nosair and the shooting of Kahana, and they did nothing. They let it go on. Remember, folks, Israel was led by Shamir back then. They were led by the Likud. The real enemy of Kahana was not the Israeli left. They loved him because he destroyed up to 11 seats from the Likud party. And that's why Shamir let him get killed. He was destroying the Likud. He was a proud and patriotic Jew, no matter what you think of his politics.
In fact, it was really so interesting that here's this man, he's an Arab, he's caught there, right there, arrested, the gun in his hand, smoking gun, and he's convicted of gun possession. He's not convicted of murder. The
nope.
Most incredible trial in all history, and this man was sent to prison, but not for murder.
It's been going on ever since. There was Irv Rubin killed. By the way, they're all killed on November 4th or 5th.
Hold up. We'll be right back.
Oh.
Okay, pick the story up there.
Well, Irv Rubin was head of the JDL. He dies on November 5th. Here's how he dies. First of all, he cuts his throat in prison. And by the way, the same thing happened to his partner. His name escapes me. Both were sent to prison for attempting to bomb a mosque in California. His partner died the same way in prison. He was beaten over the head by a fellow prisoner, and he died also on November 5th. But Irv Rubin, head of the JDL, first in prison, cuts his throat. And after he cuts his throat, he decides he didn't do a good enough job and jumped from a balcony. That's how they got rid of Irv Rubin. The murder is going on of Israeli patriots. There's a mass campaign of murder. Now, if you people in America won't even protect your Jews, what are we supposed to do in Israel when our leaders are all getting knocked off? Now, on the show yesterday, a very good show, I enjoyed it very much because I'm talking about all the other people who are getting killed. High-level cabinet ministers. Mota Gur was Rabin's deputy. Mota Gur had suffered from brain cancer, but it was over. It was a total remission. And here's how we know, because this was the first time I dabbled in murder, and I was right, and I'm right to this day. Mota Gur, one July morning, shot himself through the throat. By the way, that's significant. It's a stupid way to die. The guy knew guns. He would not shoot himself through the throat.
Now, for listeners, this is Rabin's minister. This is the Israeli soldier who took Jerusalem. Go ahead.
Well, he was Rabin's deputy. He
right.
knew all the secrets of Oslo, and he was running to Hebron and telling the people there that if I had my way, we'd be building 13 new settlements just like your own. And he was the only friend of the settlers in Rabin's whole cabinet, and one morning he shot himself through the throat. Now, I'll tell you what bothers me about that. I have two very close friends. One died, one just made it, who also had suddenly throat cancer. Joel Bainerman and Adir Zeke. So when I hear throat, it means more to me than other people would associate with a throat wound. Nevertheless, it's a very cruel and slow way to die. And, well, we are told that he was all depressed because he had cancer of the brain. Well, his doctor, Samario Chaitkin, is his name. He's the head of oncology for Ichilov Hospital. He said, and he was, Mota Gur was his personal patient. He said to the whole country, on national news and in Mariv, that is impossible. Mota Gur didn't have cancer anymore. He explained that Mota Gur had spent 3 months in Memorial Hospital, Veterans Hospital, Nonetheless, in Manhattan, I believe it was veterans. During that time, the growth went into total remission. It didn't even exist anymore. He had returned to Israel 7 weeks earlier, and he was still skinny, but he didn't have cancer. And when I read that, I knew it was murder. So I just followed the story just from the newspapers. They interviewed Montagu's secretary. She told what he was going to do this week.
Hold that thought, Whoopi, Jack.
Oh.
All right, this is Barry, and Barry is certainly talking about this Montagu, who is the deputy for Rabin, and of course, he, just a couple of months before Rabin was murdered, this man was murdered. It was called a suicide because he thought he had cancer, but he really didn't have cancer. But pick the story up there, Barry.
Well, Montagur, his secretary, describes everything he had done. He had arranged a radio meeting with Avi Bettelheim. That stood out for me. For the day of his suicide, he's going to go on the radio. He had arranged medical appointments. He had arranged a complete work week. That's not what you do when you're going to commit suicide. Look, I wrote an article with my partner back then, again Joel Bainerman. It was called The Murder of Montagur. It's, oh Lord, you have to write me personally. I have a book called Traitors and Carpetbaggers in the Promised Land. Just write me Chamish at NetVision, NETVISION.net, NET.IL, and Chamish is CHAMISH at NetVision.net.IL. I have the whole story of Montagur's death. Now, look, he wasn't the last one either. I believe in my archives you may find more material on Montagur. I know in my book, Save Israel, I have an article on his murder. Look, just go to theberrychamishwebsite.com and go into a section called Media. Within Media are my archives, and go looking. Also, if you want to buy these books, which is a lot better way than looking through my archives, you go to lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com, and you can download any book for $10. Now, may I ask a question? How much time do we have?
Well, we've got about 33 minutes.
33?
You're right.
Okay, I'm going to save something unusual for the end, because I'm now going to go to the next murder. And by the way, this murder shocked the nation. It was Rehavam Ze'evi. The nation knew him as Gandhi. He actually looked like Gandhi a bit. I suppose he was named Gandhi for that, but neither here nor there. What a murder that one. Look, Gandhi was on the 8th floor of the Hyatt Hotel. Next door to him was Yisrael. I think it was Mizrahi. I'll look in the book later. He was the head of the IDF Central Command. He was in charge of Judea and Samaria. He was the man in charge in 1990 in the year 2000. When was the takeover? I believe it was 2000. I don't want to harp on detail right now. The Arabs had a massive intifada. They took over Joseph's tomb in Shechem. And a soldier was shot. He was from the Druze tribe. A helicopter could have been sent to save him within 10 minutes. This soldier, the head of Central Command, he let him die. He let him stay overnight bleeding to death. There's a famous Israeli movie, well, it's famous amongst Israelis, about Joseph's tomb and the killing of this Druze soldier. This same soldier was in the room next to Rehavam Ze'evi, and I think that's highly significant. I'll have to get my own books to find out the names. I had a stroke that fuzzied up my memory. I'm now recovered, but I still have fuzziness. All these names have to go down in history as the people who brought down Israel, the people who hate religion. Nonetheless, on the same floor, the 8th floor, Rehavam Ze'evi, his floor, there was Yosef Sarid of the Shas Party. There was Gideon Ezra. he was the deputy defense minister of Israel. And yet, on this floor, there's no bodyguard. Rehavam Ze'ev, he was called up to his room on the eighth floor, and he was shot to death because there was no bodyguard. Anybody, supposedly, in theory, could have shot up the entire defense establishment of Israel. He was murdered, and now here's why. Again, it's always Shimon Peres, always. He's a one-man mass murder squad, and there's every story I get is the same story. I heard the story from two very, very respected Israelis. One, the journalist David Bedin, and the other, the lawyer Jack Goldberg. They took me aside, and they said, we've got the story. You're absolutely right. Ze'evi was murdered by Peres, but you don't know why. Now, here's what I did know. Ze'evi approached Sharon after he discovered something, and he gave Sharon 2 days to remove Shimon Peres from the government, or he would quit, take his party, and joining him, also quitting, was Benny Alon.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back.
Oh, I hear the music.
Okay, go right ahead, Barry. And you were just telling us, of course, that they had gone and had this gentleman that they call Gandhi had gone and said, you know, you're either going to do the right thing and expose what's going on, or I'm going to pull my party out of the government, and I'll have several other people do the same thing, and we'll bring down Sharon's party. So pick the story up there.
Ze'evi gave him 2 days, Sharon, throw Peres out of the government. And he said, if you don't throw him out, I'm taking three parties with me. Good luck in the government. And then the next day he gave a Arut Sheva, which used to be a very big deal. Today it's nothing. But it used to be a radio show, not just an internet site. And it kept Israelis informed about the war against religious and the settlers. Well, he released to Arut Sheva part of the speech he would be giving at the Knesset the next day if Peres didn't resign, if Sharon didn't boot out Peres. It was devastating. You will find it in my book, Save Israel. Go to lulu.com. And also Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Signings of the Holocaust. This is quite a story with Ze'evi. Ze'evi was murdered because Peres wanted to keep his place in the government. And Sharon has been a close friend of Peres' for 50 years. Sharon is not a right-winger. I've explained this over and over again. He was placed by Kissinger after the Yom Kippur War in the Israeli right. He had a left-wing party. He joined Menachem Begin's Chayrut party, the Shlom Tzion party, and he destroyed the right-wing politics of Israel. He destroyed the only decent moral party in Israel. He destroyed the only party that probably could have made some sense out of the Middle East, and the wars would have ended. Neither here nor there, that was who Sharon was. Now, what we're dealing with the next morning, 4 hours before Ze'evi was going to expose Shimon Peres in the Knesset, he gets a phone call that he is wanted in his room for an interview on Army radio. He goes up to the eighth floor, and he's shot to death with the card still in the door. He couldn't get the car out fast enough. He was shot to death. Now, it gets worse because I trace how this murder was done. And by the way, Arafat, Yasser Arafat, to his dying day said, no, we did not kill Ze'evi. It was an Israeli internal operation.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Barry Samitz here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sidney Barry is describing another one of the many murders that have taken place of the patriotic Jews in Israel under the guidance of Shimon Peres. But before we go on, Barry, I want you to get your website out and how people can get your books from lulu.com.
Yes. It's the only way I can sell them. But I'm going to eventually tell you about a little personal change. But LULU.com, you write my name in search, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, and you'll get all my books. And then my website, TheBarryChalmersWebsite.com. Go into the section called Media, and my archives are there. Now, on the main page, of course, are the interviews with Dr. Stan, and we highlight them. They're first on our main page. And now we go back to the murders. Ze'evi was murdered, and here's how it happened. A phone call was made to France. That was by Paris. The phone call was to the PFLP, Liberation of Palestine, the Palestine Liberation Movements. The French not only sponsored George Habash. George Habash was a Christian, a terrorist, and he died literally in the arms of Mitterrand. The French phoned Damascus. Damascus phoned the West Bank, and they worked with the Shabak, and they killed Ze'evi. They got rid of their guard. The Shabak got rid of their bodyguard, and then it was just a shooting gallery. Okay, now, if you remember, last year, Israel suddenly went to Jericho and suddenly freed all the prisoners who supposedly killed Ze'evi, and no one's heard from them ever since. Do you remember that last year?
No, I really don't, but go ahead with the story.
Well, Israel walked into Jericho, took the jail where the prisoners, and of course, look, the prisoners were put under 24-hour day guarding by American and British soldiers. The biggest worry Israel had is they opened the mouth and say that this had nothing to do with what you're talking about us. We got an order to kill Ze'evi, and everything was planned with the Shabak. They don't want the prisoners to start talking like that. Arafat wouldn't stop saying that. Ze'evi wasn't ours. He kept saying. They kill in Israel everybody lately. It's a horrible thing. You look at the names of Prime Minister Rabin is killed by the same people who killed Sharon. Yoram Rubin. Never forget that name, people. Yoram Rubin. And Paris, and Carmi Gilon. And now Carmi Gilon was the head of our Shabak. Okay? Sharon, Rabin, Ze'evi, oh my goodness, what's wrong with my memory? We just did him whatever. We have got a series
of major Israeli cabinet
ministers.
Montagur. Right, Montagur.
Of course. Look at the Israeli cabinet ministers being murdered. Look at them, people. There's more. There's Benjamin Ben-Eliezer murdered in Paris, who was a cabinet minister. By then he was the Paris ambassador. It goes on and on. It's a murder spree in Israel. It's murderama.
Now, tell me, why did they want to kill Rabin, though?
What are you talking about? Rabin wanted out of Oslo.
Oh, because he wanted to get another. He wanted to preserve Israel as a nation. He didn't want to betray it. Okay.
And Paris wanted to be prime minister, and, I mean, that's all in my books. Rabin was a good guy,
okay.
More than a bad guy. He was a weak guy, but he wanted out of this. Anyone who sees the truth, and Rabin and Montagur do the truth. The Oslo Accords would destroy Israel. Now, I'm going to mention one last thing. Carmi Gilon, head of the Shabak, one day in Jerusalem, I think it was the year 1999 or 8, it was the late 90s, there's an announcement in the paper that Carmi Gilon would be meeting at this synagogue. It's a very strange, very lesbian synagogue, you'll know. On Kokvei Katamon in Jerusalem, and I had a computer, I sent the word out to everyone, let's get Gilon, let's make him sorry he was ever born. And that's what we did. We all met at the synagogue. I got about 200 people there. I got Nadia Matar and all her women in green, and all of these people I thought were going to get him about the Rabin murder, and all they did was ask him silly questions about what he wrote, supposedly wrote for the New York Times that was being written for him, of course. They were trying to cure his memory, and I said, this is absurd. You people don't know what you're doing. This guy's getting off scot-free. And I just stood up, and they knew who I was. Believe me, Guillon knew who I was. They all knew who I was. And I said, Mr. Guillon, who murdered Yitzhak Rabin? And his face just blanched. And I said, Guillon, you're going to be interrogated. You're a murderer. And he stood up and ran out of the room. It was the end of the meeting. Ran out of the room. The meeting lasted 45 minutes of his lousy speech and a whole bunch of lousy questions till I asked him the only question that mattered. Carmi Guillon, who murdered Yitzhak Rabin? And that's a question he could answer because he was part of the team that knocked him off. Israel is a very, very frightening place. Now, I've had a little change in my life, if you want to know about it.
All right, sure we do.
You do?
Yeah, sure. And I figured that maybe you found some love interest.
Yeah, well, yes, I married her today.
You did? Well, congratulations, Barry. I figured that's really what had happened.
Well, she flew all the way from Florida, and that's what happened.
Right.
I'm going to move to the States. I have an American wife. Life should be a lot easier. And I guess I'll see what I can do living in Florida for a while. Someday we have to return to Canada. There's no health in the United States. Either of us get sick, and we don't have health. So someday we'll move back to Canada, but I'm going to live with my new wife in St. Augustine.
All right, fine. Well, I just hope that you'll be out doing some tours, and we can still call on you to come on to radio programs with us and share your knowledge of really what's going on in Israel, and especially as things, I think, get worse and worse in the coming months.
Well, she made me feel better and better. Now, she's been reading me for 4 years, and she's been on my email list. She knows me, and I just got to know her. The fact of the matter is, I can't, without this kind of support system in my life right now, I can't deal with Israel anymore. It's just too upsetting to even think about what's happening to that country. Do you know that the Americans stopped supplying Israel with bombs and armaments, and Israel is terribly deficient? Its Air Force is terribly deficient in bombs for any upcoming war?
No, I didn't know that, but I wouldn't be at all surprised. They certainly cut them off, you know, when they were just on the verge of winning the war last year, and they simply cut off.
Israel was not on the point of winning in the war last year. Israel fought the war to lose, and there was never a point where Israel could have won that war, never. Israel not only, it was a, look, the head of the Mossad said it properly. He said that war was a national disaster. And I have proven it over and over again. Israel walked into the war. Israel saw its own soldiers kidnapped. I have quoted that report by Giora Eland, who examined the kidnapping of Gilad Shalit, which was all captured on surveillance tape, and the army wouldn't intervene to save him, and they didn't announce his kidnapping for an hour and a half. Israel fought a war without infantry. There was only one reason why it relied on the Air Force, because they were fighting a proxy war. The Americans cannot send infantry into Iran. They can only send their Air Force, and Israel proved that you cannot win a war with just the Air Force. The Americans, Bush went crazy. He was furious at Israel for showing him up, and they cut off the armaments. Now, I've been reading this story now for 2-3 months, over and over again, but there's something worse. The Americans are supplying the Arabs with massive amounts of armaments right now. And nobody seems to understand that this Council on Foreign Relations, they have a goal right now, and that is to destroy Israel.
I have no question at all that you're absolutely right. I've felt this for a long time, and yet when you tell people that, they, oh, no, 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 the Zionists are running Washington, D.C., and I say, yeah, the Zionists are running Washington, D.C., they're doing a terrible job of it.
Look, I'll tell you, well, if people use their terminology properly and stop using the wrong term, Zionist, excuse me, And if people actually understood that there were within the Jewish world infiltrators, and they controlled the leadership of the Jewish world, and if they understood what a Frankist means, someone who follows Jacob Frank, the second Messiah from Poland, or Shabtai Tzvi, what a Sabbatean was, we would be able to talk seriously. But if they are blaming Zionism for the fall of Israel, they have no idea what to talk about. You blame Frankism, you blame Sabbateanism, you don't blame Zionism as such, because there were at one time very honorable Zionists. What you have now it's just a disaster what you have now. They're all crooks.
Anyway, all we can do, Barry, is just keep trying to get the information out. The average American has never heard of the Sabbateans or Frank or any of these other names that you use, and do not understand that the people who pretend to be Jews really are not Jews at all. They follow an entirely different philosophy, and they really are intent upon destroying Israel.
Look, when I think of my children, I could not live for the last year. You have to understand that Israel is going to be Saigon. Jerusalem will be Saigon. When the Arabs break through, when the rapes start, when the slaughter starts, people will do anything to get out of the country. They will climb on the roofs of the Knesset. They will dangle from the skids of helicopters. Anything to save being butchered by the Arabs. We're talking a Holocaust coming up. And that's not what worries me. What worries me is without Israel, the worldwide anti-Semitism will spread to the United States. And you are going to see the final Holocaust. That's the ideal. The final Holocaust of the Jews who don't believe in this Shabtai Tzvi Judaism. They're going to be put out of our misery. That's what's going to be happening. No one will believe me that the actual leadership of Israel is trying to shut down. Their experiment failed. They built the country. They figure they have every right to destroy the country as well. And the leader of the destruction, hands down, is Shimon Peres, because he's a murderer. I mean, he's just a murderer, but you've got Netanyahu working for the CFR, doing the same stuff. In short, you've got Barak. You've got all of them. This is what I've been saying for years. You've got all of them. And you cannot fight the leadership, because it's the same leadership of the United States. Have I gone over the leaders of the CFR with you yet?
You go right ahead. Go ahead.
Here are the Jewish organizations, the major ones in the United States. World Zionist Conference, Bronfman's. We'll do Bronfman's shortly. The Council of Presidents of Presidents, whatever, Mort Zuckerman. American Jewish Congress, Henry Siegman. Oh, Lord. Oh, of course. Revlon. What about Lauder? What about Lauder? Ronald Lauder. He is Benjamin Netanyahu's tied to the New World Order. They're all CFR. All the leaders, all of these organizations were none of these organizations elected their leaders. Rich Jews formed these organizations to create Jewish policy. The Jews of America have no say in their future. And they're about to find out when Israel goes just how important Israel was. No matter how it was created, really, it was created very cruelly. But nonetheless, without that, the anti-Semitism is simply going to wipe out Jews everywhere. Look what's happening in France. You've got right now 8 million Muslims against 800,000 Jews. The Jews are escaping France. 25,000 live in Florida in 1 year.
Well, I think you will have some friends among the conservative evangelical Christians here in this country, but we may be under attack as well as the Jewish people are, because there are people who hate both Jews and Christians and will do everything they can, of course, to destroy them, and I think that what...
You've got it different. In America, they're Catholicizing the country with illegal immigration. The plot with America is different than with Israel. You are going to be an America with 40 million more Catholics, and you are going to be a country joined to Canada and Mexico with really screwy trade agreements. All that is true, but you're going to survive Israel's going to be wiped out and all those people are going to be killed.
Well, we're going to have to wait to see. I think America's going to be coming into some very difficult times as well, but I feel that we just have to do our best and rely upon our Lord. But I think there's going to be tremendous persecution in America. I would not be at all surprised if we would not see either chemical or biological attacks or certainly nuclear attacks or certainly man-made famines. Everything is pointing in that direction. We're going
you
to
know what? Please, Dr. Stan, write down thebiteshow.com.
I did
an interview for 2 hours. Please go to my site. Go on the main page and double-click The Bite Show. That's a good way to get on. The Barry Chambers website.com. George Ann Hughes, The Bite Show. I did 2 hours on anti-Semitism in America. It's terrifying.
Well, maybe we can do a two-hour program here sometime in the next week or so on anti-Semitism on Radio Liberty as well, because I think it is actually growing. Certainly we see it in the emails that I'm constantly getting and my friends are getting and being very, very critical, because we won't come out and say it's all the Zionists who are behind everything. But then other people get mad at me because they won't say it's all the Catholics or it's all the Vatican or it's all the Jesuits. And I really think that they're all missing the real issue, and that is that there are powerful spiritual forces that are at work to destroy Israel, to destroy Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran, and I also believe to destroy America as well.
Create a bloc. We've done this, and I'll say it again. Me and Joel, my partner, in 1993, December, met one of the two authors, Israeli authors, of the Oslo Accords. And I'm going to say this quote until people understand this actually happened. His name was Ron Pudak, and he said, my boss, who was Yossi Beilin, doesn't believe in borders. He thinks borders cause wars. Israel without borders won't be involved in any more wars. It'll be finished. Now, Joel knew what he was talking about. I didn't.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry to wrap up the program. Okay, Barry, you got 3 minutes to wrap things up.
Well, he said, I said, Israel without borders, there's no Israel. He said, there won't be anything. We're all going to be part of the same block. And we'll all be helping each other. And I said, you mean Oslo is to destroy Israel, take away its borders? He said, yes. And from that moment until today, I've been screaming, people, these people who created Oslo, they're nuts. These people are nuts. You got to fight them. With all your heart and soul, you got to fight them. These people are insane. But no one listened to me. And you know what? I'm going to have a different phone number coming up soon. And I'm going to be living in America with my new wife. Come and invite me to speak. I may actually be available to say a few words to your group.
All right, Five. Well, I'm sure that whatever you're doing, you have a tremendous impact, and you're certainly going to give us your new telephone number, aren't you? You can give it
to me. As soon as I have one, you'll be the first person I call. Okay. I'm not exaggerating either.
All right, Five. Well, of course, we always really enjoy having you on, and I'm sure there are other the talk show hosts that still are willing to have you on, because I think your message is very, very parallel to mine. Certainly, I believe that you recognize that there are terrible times that lie ahead. We do as well. But, of course, we believe that there are powerful spiritual forces that are energizing this whole move to destroy Israel and certainly to destroy America.
If you ever want to do a show about my secret, and that's Return of the Giants, I will talk to you about it as well. There is something spiritual going on, and it is really, really, it gets me in trouble whenever I speak about it, but it's as accurate as, well, I don't lie in my journalism. I never write a lie.
Well,
I don't print rumors, none of that stuff.
Well, of course, that's really about UFOs, isn't it?
That is the crazy wave that hit Israel while the Oslo Accord was being formulated. Suddenly, the Nephilim giants start appearing before Israelis. There is another side to this story. That's also on lulu.com. If you ever want to talk to me about the spiritual forces, They are way worse. I'm telling you, they are way worse than you can imagine.
I can imagine how terrible and frightening they are. This is the recurrent message of my ministry, is that we're really fighting a spiritual battle on a political and ideological battlefield. But I'll tell you what, next time we get together and we can put in a couple of hours, we'll talk about the return of the Nephilim, because I believe they're here.
You've got a date. It's a subject I'm afraid will harm my other work, but you know what? I can't stop this slow decay of Israel. I'm helpless.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, our guest this evening has been Barry Shamus. He promises next time we're together, we'll talk about the return of the giants. And, of course, this gets into UFOs, the Nephilim, and, of course, these truly demonic spiritual forces that are working the world today. Barry, congratulations on your new bride. Look forward to meeting her and talking to her, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
You got it.
Good
night. Nice speaking to you, as always.
Good night.
Bye, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you've enjoyed Barry's commentary this evening. And, of course, you know, I think it's so vitally important that we do understand that the only way you can grasp what's really taking place is the realization and the recognition the powerful spiritual forces working behind the scenes that are controlling the destiny of men. So, of course, if you want to have discussions on this, my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, and then our most recent talk, Forbidden Secret, I think that you'll find it fascinating. Chris Pinto's excellent award-winning DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. His most recent release, The Secret, it's called Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And then, of course, our favorite DVDs, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. These will give you the picture of what's going on today. The DVD, Rape of the Soul, going into, of course, embedded art, embedded pornographic art. And then, of course, William H. Kennedy's excellent book, entitled Satanic Crimes by William Kennedy, gives you tremendous insight into what's going on. And then, of course, our 4-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance. Our 4-tape set on the supernatural. Our book, going into the Aleister Crowley, Blood on the Altar. Malachi Martin's wonderful book, Hostage to the Devil. And then, of course, that wonderful book by Johanna Michelson, The Beautiful Side of Evil. All of these, of course, began to introduce you to this other dimension. And ladies and gentlemen, there really is another dimension. This has certainly been described by those people who've been in contact with it. I have a very good friend who was actually a medium for many years, and he would actually pray for the demonic being to come and take over him, and the demonic being would come and take over him, and he said it was just like I was sitting beside my own body, and here was this being would be talking, and I wouldn't recognize the thing he was saying, the voice, what he was saying, and the demonic being would know all sorts of things about the people he was talking to. And then eventually, of course, the demonic being would leave, he'd go back into his own body. And, of course, fortunately, my friend eventually became a Christian and gave his life to the Lord, and he's certainly one of the most dedicated Christians I know. So there is an alternative for people out there, but they have to turn their lives over to our Lord, and you're going to have to make that decision one of these days, because as we enter this period of chaos and crisis that lies ahead, none of us are going to be able to manage things really on our own. We have one more book I'd like to mention. It's called The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom. The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom. And we carry the book for one specific reason, because I think it will give you hope when things may appear sometimes to be hopeless. One other book, of course, 90 Minutes in Heaven by Don Piper. And the book is important because it describes a terrible injury that was incurred by a minister. And why did God allow that to happen? So that's 90 Minutes in Heaven, and of course, the book, The Hiding Place by Corrie ten Boom. Remember, if you'd like to know more about any of the things we mentioned, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like more information, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a copy of our February newsletter, where it explains why we're in Iraq and Iran and why.